afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives Transportation, Finance, and Policy Committee for this Thursday, February 10th. I am State Representative Frank Hornstein, Chair of the Committee. Our first item of business is for our committee legislative assistant to take the role. Mr. Dodge.
Chair Hornstein.
Present.
Hornstein, present. Vice Chair Cagle.
Present.
Cagle, present. Representative Petersburg.
Petersburg, present.
Petersburg, present. Representative Barr.
Here.
Barr, present. Representative Bernardi. Representative Bernardi. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, present.
Elkins, present. Representative Frederick.
Frederick, present.
Frederick, present. Representative Houseman.
Present.
Houseman, present. Representative Heinrich.
Heinrich, present.
Heinrich, present. Representative Kosnick. Representative Kosnick. Representative Mason.
Mason, present.
Mason, present. Representative Murphy.
Murphy, present.
Murphy, present. Representative Nelson.
Nelson, present.
Nelson, present. Representative Olson. Representative Olson. Representative Richardson. Representative Richardson. Representative Torkelson.
Torkelson, present.
Torkelson, present. Representative West.
West, present.
West, present. There is a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Dodge. And our first item of business is to approve the minutes of our February 8th meeting. And I will call on Representative Petersburg for that motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. They were brief and short and looked everything good to me. So I would move the approval of the minutes as presented.
The minutes are moved, and members, we will do a voice vote on this, so if you could briefly unmute. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 All of those opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. So, members, today we have the second in a two-part series of informational hearings on topics in safety as it relates to the work of our Transportation Committee. On Tuesday, we talked about the issue of traffic safety and crashes, motor vehicle crashes predominantly. Today, we're going to talk very specifically about pedestrian safety. And as we learned on Tuesday, speeding is an epidemic in Minnesota, as are deaths due to pedestrian deaths in our state. It was pointed out to me, I believe, by Mr. Grilley, earlier today that last year we had 58 deaths, and that is more than one a week. And so that is a very serious issue. I do want to call attention, I want to give a quick shout out to Representative Heinrich, and we'll be hearing later on from the Anoka County Engineer. But just to show you how pervasive this issue is, I put in members' packets a editorial from the Star Tribune, their masthead editorial from Friday, December 14th, 2012. I'd like everybody to take a look at it, but the editorial writers at the Star Tribune, I thought, framed our hearing today quite well. This is really for the benefit of the public and because members have this in their packet. But the editorial starts this way. It says, Highway 10 death trap needs MnDOT fix. Four pedestrians have been killed in as many months. And the first paragraph says, for 50 years, transportation engineers obsessed about building roads that moved as many cars as possible, as rapidly as possible. Pedestrians and bicyclists were afterthoughts. Then as habits in many cities began to change, engineers rebalanced their thinking. It goes on to say where conditions and budgets allowed, they lowered speed limits, installed bike lanes, crosswalks, and sidewalks. They began paying more attention to local sensibilities, including safety, and less to the needs of simply drivers passing through. And then it goes on to talk about a 16-year-old named Hannah Kraft of Ramsey, who died on November 26th, 2012, as she was trying to cross Highway 10. And I know that when we took a trip up to the northern suburbs last year, or 2 years ago, pre-COVID, I thought it was a very impactful trip. And I really appreciated Representative Heinrich and the other members of on both sides of the aisle from our North Suburban delegation on this committee for the very holistic way that they presented traffic safety and pedestrian safety issues in the northern suburbs. And I'm very pleased that we are making progress on Highway 10 appreciate your work, Representative Heinrich, and look forward to the testimony later today from the Anoka County engineer. So with that, members, we have a really special guest to kick off this hearing today. Angie Schmidt is coming to us from my home state of Ohio. She's coming to us from Cleveland. I'm from Cincinnati originally. But Ms. Schmidt is the author of a new book called Right of Way, Race, Class, and the Silent Epidemic of Pedestrian Deaths in America. So I've asked her to just frame up the broader issues that we want to address today. And again, she is a national expert on this issue, and we're very happy to have her. Welcome to our committee, Ms. Schmidt. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, hi, thanks for having me. My name is Angie Schmidt. I'm gonna pull up my screen here. I have a little presentation. System preferences, sorry, one sec. I'm gonna get started while I'm screwing around with my screen. So I wrote a book called Right of Way. It was published last year by a group called Island Press. And when I talk about it, I say it's about the pedestrian safety crisis in the United States. And in the presentation, I'm gonna explain what I mean by that, what we can do about it, and why we haven't done it already. It's blocking my screen sharing right now.
Schmidt, I can share my screen if you'd like to.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. That would be awesome. Sorry, I got a new computer and it's throwing me off a little bit. Do you have the presentation?
Yeah, just one moment.
Ms. Schmidt, I think everyone on the call has had some form or another of this problem. So
can everyone see that?
Yeah, I saw it and I don't know, is that my screen or yours? Is that your screen?
I think that's mine. Yep.
We have it up, so you can proceed, Ms. Schmidt.
Okay. So I usually start off just talking a little bit about the history of this issue. The second slide shows a picture. I'm using Cleveland where I live as an example, but it shows what the city street looked like sort of at the early stage of the auto era in the United States. And one thing I like to point out about it, I think we're still sort of struggling to pull it up, but one thing you'll notice about this is there aren't any crosswalks in the photo. And it is from around 1910 in Cleveland. And at that time, the city was really pedestrian oriented, you know, a lot around us, a system of streetcars. And one thing that's noticeable, if you look back at these historic photos about this time, is that pedestrians look very relaxed. And at this point, there weren't any rules about sort of where they could cross. And at that time, streets had a lot of social uses. Children would play in the streets. Merchants would sell goods from carts. But when cars started coming into cities in a big way after the introduction of the Model T Ford in the 1920s, immediately people started getting killed in high numbers. So around that time, there was a lot of pushback and a lot of anger about the number of people who started getting killed. Thousands of people in cities like Philadelphia, Cleveland, St. Louis were getting killed every year all of a sudden by cars. And at the time, they were mostly owned by wealthy people. So there was some pushback. There was some political pushback from residents of those cities. I think like we're still struggling with the, I'm sorry. Okay, here's my presentation. I'm really sorry. So again, like I'm saying, here's an old picture of 1930 in Cleveland. This is the beginning of the auto era. And you can see there already are a few cars, but at this point they haven't totally taken over our public space. So again, you know, they used to be places where a lot of people felt welcome to do varied activities. Okay, but all that changes very quickly around this time period. Like I said, the Model T Ford is introduced. Thousands of cars start coming into cities. A lot of people start getting killed. And the in response, there was this, there's a historian named Peter Norton who writes about there was this intentional effort on the part of auto industry related groups to sort of deflect blame from cars and from the anger that was rising about all these deaths. So they introduced this this concept of jaywalking. And that was really sort of successful in reframing what streets were for, who belonged in streets. And you can see there was a huge change in the way we conceptualized street space and how it was used. This is just, it was taken just 16 years after that original photo. And it is a different street, but you can see in that time just how much pedestrian activity was displaced.
I think we still have your photo, the original photo of the streetcar and the people. So I don't know if you were there.
Wait, you guys can't see this?
I'm going to pause from screen sharing, Mr. Chair, briefly, so I can make sure you're seeing the same thing we're seeing, Ms. Schmidt. I'll reshare my screen again to make sure you can see. Can you see that, Ms. Schmidt?
Yes. Okay, I'm sorry about that again.
Just say next slide if you'd like me to move forward.
Oh, okay, thank you. Okay, yes. So next slide. So moving into sort of where we are right now, if we go to the next slide, slide number five. So in the past 10 years, there's been a big escalation in pedestrian deaths.
Mr. Hatch, can I move the slide? There we go. Thank you. I think we're on the right slide now. Thanks.
Okay. So that's what I'm calling the pedestrian safety crisis. We've had about a 50% increase in the past 10 years. And we really haven't seen the same for drivers and passengers. So, and just real briefly, in traffic safety, that's rare. We've generally seen improving outcomes since the 1970s, and that's sort of what we would expect. And we haven't seen the same thing in a lot of our peer nations. So trying to explain sort of what's going on here, why are we seeing this sudden escalation in pedestrian deaths was the topic of my book and what I'm going to be trying to explain in this presentation. And I am going to try to just rush through it pretty briefly. But if we go into the next slide, one thing I wanted to point out is this problem has not gotten better over the last couple of years as we've been in the pandemic. It's actually, we expected pedestrian deaths to fall because there was so much more telecommuting going on and less driving, but actually the problem got markedly worse in the last couple of years, which surprised a lot of people. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about who is impacted. So if we go to the next slide, can you see that with the people? So this is a problem that affects a lot of people that are a little bit marginalized in our society. And if we look at who is more likely to be killed, there's a racial component. I think like we're starting to understand about a lot of our public health problems. A lot of our sort of built-in inequalities sort of present themselves when we look at the data for this problem. So this is Black folks are at increased risk, almost 75% more likely to be killed this way. And Native folks in particular are almost twice as likely to be killed while walking. And I'll talk more later in the presentation about why that is. But I also just wanted to touch on, if we go to the next slide real quickly, another group that's at disproportionate risk is older folks. And this is a group, it's important to point out that this is a group that's really fast growing in the United States. We have a big demographic shift happening right now. And about one in four people in the United States is 65 or older. And that is expected to grow a lot over the next few decades to as much as one in three. So there's groups like the CDC that predicted as far back as 10 years ago that just the aging of the American population could increase the number of pedestrian deaths that were happening. So one of the upshots here really is we have to do a better job. We haven't done a good job planning for these kind of folks, and that needs to change a little bit. Okay, so next slide. I want to talk, so that's a little bit about who is being killed. I also want to talk a little bit about where, because there's a strong geographic component to the problem. So I'm using this as an example, and this is, you can sort of extrapolate to most metro areas in the United States, follow this pattern. But in this example, I'm using Metro Atlanta in 1990. And what I want to point out here, this is a racial dot map that shows basically segregation in the Atlanta metro area. And the green areas show concentrations of Black residents, orange shows segregated white areas, and the yellow, this is in 1990, shows areas that are a little more diverse. So if we go forward to the next slide, you can see just over 20 years, how much demographic change there was in the Atlanta suburbs. And so originally when these northern suburbs of Atlanta were settled, Gwinnett and Cobb County, they were sort of, there was a lot of white families sort of fleeing desegregation in the Atlanta public schools, and they were very suburban is the point. The expectation was that everyone would have a two-car garage and drive everywhere. There wasn't much in the way of pedestrian infrastructure. Now they're much more diverse. Up here in this purple section, there's a lot of immigrants. This is sort of a landing place for a lot of immigrants to Metro Atlanta. So people will come from a lot of times countries that have a much lower car ownership rate and a much higher tradition of walking for transportation. And now they're landing right in some of the most dangerous places to walk. And one of the most dangerous roads in Metro Atlanta goes right through this purple, actually in the whole state of Georgia, it's called Buford Highway, goes right through this purple area where these new immigrants are arriving, a lot of them without cars and relying on a bus in an area with that doesn't even have any sidewalks around along the major road in a lot of cases. So that's another thing that I think is contributing. We have this demographic change. A, the population's aging a little bit. B, our suburbs are getting more diverse racially and also economically. We talk sometimes about the suburbanization of poverty. And that's, I think it's really underappreciated trend that has an impact here. Okay, so if we can go to the next slide, just real quickly, there's also, we also have this issue, like I mentioned, there's racial disparities around this problem. We also have this issue that seems to be an issue of institutional racism in our street infrastructure. So it's very common. I'm using Cleveland as an example here, and this is another racial dot map that shows pretty much a segregation pattern in Cleveland that's pretty clear. Now, if we look at the most dangerous street segments in Cleveland, one thing going ahead to the next slide, I just want to point out how closely the neighborhoods of color align with the most dangerous street segments in Cleveland. And that is, again, something we see in metro area after metro area isn't unusual. So I think there's a couple things sort of happening there. A, people of color, people in lower income neighborhoods, that's obviously not the same, but a lot of times there is some overlap. More likely to rely on walking, more likely to ride the bus, but also a lot of times their neighborhoods are passed over for the kind of infrastructure that could really keep them safe. There was just a new study I saw today out of San Francisco that showed poor neighborhoods in San Francisco are less likely to have crosswalks. So there really is an issue of sort of inequality in the infrastructure that contributes to this as well. Okay, finally, if we go to the next slide, I'm gonna wrap up just a little bit about talking about this third trend that has a big impact that I think we need to be a little more conscious of in planning. So I start off talking about how the American population is aging a little bit. Also, we're having these demographic trends where we have more people who might rely on walking sort of out in suburban areas that maybe don't have very good accommodations for them to walk. So that's putting them in a dangerous situation. We also have this big change in our vehicle mix over the last 10 years. When we were coming out of the last recession, the majority of cars being sold were sedans. So they were like Honda Civics, Toyota Camrys, that kind of car. But since then, there's been a big shift to SUVs, crossover SUVs, and there's been a big increase in pickup truck sales. And if we go to the next slide, That turns out to have a big impact on pedestrian safety also. So if you look, I'm using myself sort of here for scale. I'm about 5'6", so I'm just like an average to tall woman. And you can see if I was hit by this Honda Civic here on the left, it would hit me sort of in the legs, which is not a great place to be struck by a car. But you can see over here on the right, this Toyota 4Runner, if I was struck by that car, it would hit me kind of in the chest or the abdomen. And some of the big pickup trucks would hit me almost in the face. The front profile is so high now. So that's a much more dangerous place to be to suffer a heavy forceful blow. And there's very good data, including there was a study that was published. It was a review of data by the Federal Highway Administration in 2015. And it found that pedestrians that were struck by SUVs were 2.5 to 3 times more likely to be killed than those that were struck by sedans. So that's raising the risk profile for everyone. Cars are getting bigger. And here's an example I use in all my presentations. This is my son when he was 4 years old. Again, some of the pickup trucks have just become really enormous. They have pretty serious visibility issues in both the front and the back, although some new regulations have addressed the rear blind spot issue to some extent, which is good. Okay, so moving on to the last slide. I hope we're all on the same page with that. I'm sorry about the problems earlier. But there are some opportunities I just wanted to point out to address this sort of in the new infrastructure bill. We have in most parts of the United States, there's a big backlog in sort of attention to this issue, the amount of resources that have been invested in our roadways for pedestrian infrastructure compared to driver infrastructure. And I know you, I think that in Minnesota, you're a little bit ahead of us, sort of where we are with that in Ohio, but I think some of the later speakers are going to talk more to the local issues. But I did want to say there is this money coming down as a result of the new infrastructure bill. Only a small fraction of it is actually devoted to safety, but there is a big pool of competitive funding now. They included $100 billion in competitive grants. And the new USDOT staff does seem to be very motivated to address sustainability and safety issues. So it's a good opportunity for states or localities to, if they do have projects related to pedestrian safety that they want to implement and they need funding for, there's a good opportunity to take advantage of those federal grants that are coming down. And that's sort of it. Thanks for having me. And I look forward to hearing from the rest of the speakers.
Thank you so much, Ms. Schmidt. And I wanted to just quickly see if there were one or two questions. I want to make sure we have time for the rest of the program here today. So, but we want to pause here if there are any member questions. And I'm going to scan my participant list. I don't see any, sure. But you're certainly welcome to stay on.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, I'm sorry. Who is Representative Mason? Go ahead.
Thank you. Just a comment. I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio, and I noticed in your map you have a cemetery where my grandparents are buried, and also I lived right along Broadway, so that's pretty familiar territory. Thank you.
There's a lot of us out there.
Well, Representative Mason, I'll have to watch Bengals-Browns games with you from now on. Okay, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just wondering if there's any, if you're going to be doing any of that overlay in Minneapolis. I think it'd be really interesting to see some of those trends in our state as well. So if that's a fun weekend project you want to take up, I'd love to see it.
My guess is, and I think some of the later speakers actually will have a better handle on that. My guess is that it's probably out there, at least for Minneapolis, maybe not for the whole state. But it is a kind of the kind of project that I think would be easy for someone to pull together.
Okay. Representative Torkelson, are you, I saw the little yellow frame around you, or did you have a question?
Yeah, real quick, Ms. Schmidt. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You correlated to age and race. So any in relation to traffic speed?
Ms. Schmidt.
Yes. traffic speed has an enormous impact on this issue. So the relationship, there's like a physics relationship when someone is struck, the force of the blow, and it isn't linear. So just a few difference, if we can lower speeds just a few miles per hour, often it can increase someone's chance of survival by a lot, a surprising amount. And that's especially true for older folks. So in a lot of cities, that's been one of the key strategies, is trying to control. And in some countries that have addressed this more successfully, that's one of the key strategies, is controlling travel speed, especially in areas where shopping areas where pedestrians are present.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. And Mr. Schmidt, you're welcome to stay on. We have a lot of great speakers here. Before we get to the next part of the program, I wanted to call on Representative Richardson, and just let folks know that Representative Richardson and I had a conversation around the holidays, and she raised this as we were talking about different items and issues that we may want to address as a committee. And Representative Richardson really inspired this idea for this hearing and some of the themes. And so I wanted to just have you, Representative Richardson, make a few introductory comments in terms of this issue and your thoughts about it. And I really do appreciate so much your work on this and helping us bring this to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I want to thank you for prioritizing safety issues this week. And I also want to acknowledge the families that are on this call that will be presenting, that will share their stories, and the many families who have shared their stories previously with the legislature as well. And thank you to Ms. Schmidt for her information. We know that the vast majority of pedestrian fatalities involve things like reckless speeding, running red lights, or distraction. And we know that distracted driving is a critical issue. And I also just want to take a moment to thank you again, Chair Hornstein, for your leadership on that issue as well, because one of the most impactful hearings I ever attended as a legislator was the hearing related to the distracted driving bill that you were successful in carrying and getting passed, where we heard the deep pain and trauma of loss that have been experienced by too many Minnesota families that have lost loved ones. I also think about the leadership of former state representative, now Commissioner Lori Halverson, and her leadership in the aftermath of the heartbreaking death of a 13-year-old student in Eden named Patrick, who was hit by a car in 2019 on his way to school. And at that time, both Commissioner Halverson and Representative Mason and I represented portions of Eden. And that his death, Patrick's death, hit the Eden community extremely hard. And here we are more than 2 years later, and the number of pedestrians killed in Minnesota are rising, and the number of pedestrians killed nationally is increasing as well. I appreciated the information that Ms. Schmidt laid out. We know that the risk is not evenly distributed. Older adults, people of color, people in low-income communities are disproportionately represented in fatal crashes involving people walking. And we know that there are disparities, in particular when we look at the rates for Black and Indigenous communities, and also for people over 50, there's an overrepresentation as well. We've been hearing from community, and what we've been hearing from community, there's families that they've forbid their kids to cross streets to get to community centers, or they're forbidding their kids to be able to take advantage of like the local libraries because there's fear, with certain streets and certain intersections. And we've also heard from a lot of neighbors who are speaking up in terms of what they want to see in terms of increased access for bike lanes, bus lanes, wider sidewalks. And I just think that we have a tremendous opportunity before us right now to get us moving in the right direction, because as we see the number of deaths that are increasing, I think it's really a call to us as a state that there is more that we can do in order to prevent these tragic deaths. So thank you for the opportunity to speak briefly, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Richardson, for those very insightful comments. And we look forward, we will have Commissioner Halverson and a resident of Egan later in the hearing. So now I'd like to turn, we have a number of testifiers. And so our first testifier for the day is Ashwat Narayanan. And he is the executive director of R Streets Minneapolis. And I just simply know him as Ash, and he's a wonderful advocate. And we really think it's fantastic of you to be here and to kick us off as our first testifier. Please state your name for the record and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes, very well.
Thank you so much. My name is Ash Narayanan, and as Chair Hornstein said, I'm the executive director of Our Streets Minneapolis, an organization dedicated to making biking, walking, and rolling easy and comfortable for everybody in our city. I serve on the Minnesota Department of Transportation's Sustainable Transportation Advisory Committee and co-chair its VMT Reduction and Transportation Options Work Group. I also represent most of Minneapolis on the Metropolitan Council's Transportation Advisory Board. My background is in civil and transportation engineering. Thank you again for this opportunity to speak before you today. And as Angie showcased in her presentation, we have an epidemic of traffic crashes on our streets today. Close to 40,000 people die each year in the United States, and the people who are faced with the worst consequences of this are our most vulnerable road users, who are people who walk. For people walking, and Angie shared this as well, our streets are getting more dangerous. Between 2010 and 2019, people driving a vehicle struck and killed over 54,000 people walking. And the number of people struck and killed in that time period increased by 45%. It's only getting worse. 49 out of 50 states became more dangerous for people walking in terms of crashes, and Minnesota was no exception. 58 people walking lost their lives in our state in 2021. And I can guarantee that every single one of us on this call has either been in a traffic crash or knows someone who has had a severe injury or a fatality from a car crash. This should not be normal. And as Angie and Representative Richardson pointed out, there are huge disparities in who is hurt and killed as a result of traffic crashes as well. Our Black, African-American, and Native American community members are disproportionately represented in fatalities while walking. So why is this happening? Unfortunately, these statistics are no accident. And this may seem harsh, but it is a failure of several decades of in how we've chosen our priorities in transportation. Our engineering and our planning systems have chosen to prioritize and invest in the ability for cars to drive through our communities as quickly as possible while paying little attention to the consequences of that priority. We spend about $4 billion a year in transportation spending. That's the Department of Transportation's budget. And of that $4 billion, we choose to spend about 70% on highway and roadway infrastructure. And the amount we spend on walking infrastructure is less than 1/3 of 1%. In the last month, we saw a new report from the Metropolitan Council that recommends we spend between $6 and $7 billion over the next 20 years on expanding freeway capacity throughout our region to reduce delay for car drivers. This is a vision that, if it comes to reality, will have even more disastrous consequences for people walking. This pattern of spending has resulted in the creation of communities where it is nearly impossible to easily and comfortably walk to school, to work, shopping, or recreation. We see streets like Olson Memorial Highway and Interstate 94 in our cities that cut through majority Black and brown communities. People are forced to dodge and weave across several lanes of high-speed traffic as a matter of course. In my own neighborhood, the Seward neighborhood in Minneapolis, on the stretch of Hennepin County-owned street called Franklin Avenue, there are no marked crosswalks by my house for over 7 blocks. I routinely see mothers risking theirs and their children's lives every day simply to get from the apartment complex where they live to the grocery store across the street. Again, this should not be normal. We know the solutions to this problem, and Angie spoke to them as well. We really need to design our streets for safety and not speed. It is not possible to have both. This means that we must narrow our lane widths, provide continuous and ample sidewalks throughout our communities, and create protected infrastructure for those using bicycles, wheelchairs, and strollers. We must also stop expanding dangerous and polluting freeways through our most vulnerable communities. And counterintuitively, this does not mean that it will take us longer to get to our destinations. Often, when we see these treatments carried out, we see improvements for every roadway users, including people in cars. We must also provide fast and accessible public transportation to every community in our state. And we don't need to wait to accomplish any of this. Even a small shift in our spending priorities of the $4 billion I talked about earlier can free up hundreds of millions of dollars to eliminate this epidemic on our streets. We can quickly retrofit thousands of miles of our worst streets in a matter of weeks. As the leader of an organization that is dedicated to making our streets better, one of the worst parts of my job is listening to the children or parents of folks who have been killed walking or biking on our streets. These are preventable tragedies. I urge each and every one of you decision makers in this room to vote in favor of prioritizing the safety of our users on our transportation system over everything else. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Mr. Narayanan, and I really appreciate your testimony and your work. And we will be continuing to engage with you as our session continues, particularly as it relates to the Infrastructure Act. Okay, our next speaker is Mr. Anu Willie from the Sierra Club. Mr. Willie, are you with us? Please state your name for the record and proceed.
I'm here. Thank you.
Oh, sorry, Ms. Willie. I apologize.
Great. Thank you, Chair Hornstein. My name is Anu Willie. Thank you to the committee for giving me the opportunity to speak today. I am a resident of Minneapolis, a graduate student at the University of Minnesota, and a volunteer with the Sierra Club Minnesota North Star chapter. I travel around the city by multiple modes, usually walking, biking, and taking transit, and occasionally I drive. I value pedestrian safety because my life and the lives of everyone in the state of Minnesota depends on it. I've had way too many moments while walking to the grocery store or crossing the street to catch the bus when I thought I would be struck by a reckless or apathetic driver and seriously injured or killed. In my day-to-day life, I shouldn't have to question my safety as often as I do, and neither should anyone else. It's not just me. Around 100 people in Minneapolis die every year from traffic crashes, and my Black and Indigenous neighbors are most at risk. The city of Minneapolis has an honorable goal to eliminate traffic deaths by 2027, known as Vision Zero, but we can't achieve this without state funding and support. MnDOT's Complete Streets policy says all streets should be safe to use by all people of all ages and all abilities, but people like me who walk, bike, and roll are often an afterthought in transportation projects. With all the money available from federal and state governments, you can change this. You can make sure life-saving pedestrian improvements are built into every transportation project. I implore you to support allocating $85 million to implement local and statewide pedestrian and bicycle plans. These improvements cost way less than what we spend year after year to support our car-dependent infrastructure, and they'll result in hundreds of lives saved. It's a common excuse that there's not enough funding to make these changes, but we have the money. We just need the willpower. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Willie, and we appreciate your work very much, and thanks for being here. Our next speaker is Becky Alper from the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. And by the way, members, I will pause for questions if anyone has questions of Mr. Narayanan or Ms. Willie. We'll take those after Ms. Alper. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thanks very much. My name is Becky Elper. And good afternoon, Chair Hornstein and committee members. I represent approximately 70,000 people in South Minneapolis as commissioner for the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. I've been in office 40 days so far, and pedestrian safety has already risen to the top as a chief concern of my constituents. Residents want safe infrastructure in their neighborhoods that will allow them to walk and bike with their families to local parks. And measures like this are unfortunately not happening fast enough. In 2020, in response to desires to create safe spaces from COVID and from speeding traffic, cities around the country, including Minneapolis's own park board, took the big step of closing streets to cars and opening them to people walking and biking. And guess what? People flocked to these areas because they built community and allowed people to improve their mental and physical health without fearing being hit by a car. Repurposing this road space for people took political will and money, and we need your help to do more of these innovative projects. I'm also a mom to two little girls, ages 5 to 7, and just like residents of South Minneapolis, I think a lot about their health, their well-being, and their safety, especially keeping them safe from vehicles while on foot. And my fears, they are justified. It's not uncommon to have headlines like this one from the Star Tribune in 2021. Woman, 58, is killed crossing Minneapolis's Hiawatha Avenue. All too often, it is our state highways and our state-funded streets that are the least safe roads in our communities to be a pedestrian. So it's time to get serious about actually improving pedestrian safety around our state, from South Minneapolis to Austin to War Road to Brainerd. We need to say no to highway expansion projects in the core metro area that simply induce more traffic congestion. We need to say yes to truly life-changing infrastructure projects, like actually rethinking and transforming Interstate 94 through our central cities. And we need to say yes to prioritizing and funding projects that implement complete streets policies that allow kids to walk and bike to schools or parks. So it's time to get serious about pedestrian safety so that we don't have headlines like this one from just a couple months ago in December 2021. Patrol searching for driver who fatally struck girl, age 8, in Brooklyn Center. For the safety of my constituents, for the safety of my daughters, and for the safety of communities across the state, the time to act on pedestrian safety is now. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Alper, for that very, very moving testimony. Members, are there any questions for our first three testifiers? Let me just scan here. Mr. Howe, I don't see any, so we will move on to our next set of testifiers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason has her hand up.
Oh, I didn't see that. Representative Mason, go ahead.
Thank you.
Maybe you could indicate if it's a comment, please make the comment. If you have a question, just indicate who it's for.
Okay, anybody can react to this. I remember when I was door knocking pre-COVID, talking to a young woman. She had graduated that year from high school. Her car broke down, so she was biking. And she was telling me people would throw things at her or yell, you know, negative or obscene things at her. They were just really angry that she was riding her bicycle on the road. So I'm wondering if the people that have talked, are they hearing those things as well? The comment is, I think it's more than structural problems that we're facing when it comes to pedestrians and bicycles.
Very quickly, if one of you would like to comment, or maybe that was just an observation, Representative Mason. Okay, good. Well, thank you. I mean, obviously, I think you're identifying another safety hazard on the roads that we have, road rage, and we've had actually people getting shot at. This is definitely another safety issue that we have to address. So, members, we're going to turn now.
Representative Koznick has his hand up.
Oh boy, I'm sorry. I not looking at my participant list. Representative Koznick.
Hi, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to, for the record, I missed the roll call at the beginning of the meeting. Just for the record, my attendance at the meeting.
Okay, and I think you. Thank you, Representative Koznick. We will note that. And also, Representative Bernardi had contacted me, and she's joining by phone. So please note Representative Bernardi's present as well. Okay, members, thank you. We are going to now turn to our next set of testifiers. And this is the folks that are going to be testifying now come to us as a result of a couple of community meetings I was invited to again. This would have been in the fall of 2019. And it's really when I, began to realize not simply how widespread this problem is, but that there is a lot of grassroots activity on it and people doing problem solving in communities all across the state. And so we want to highlight two of those communities now. And we have a member and former member of the legislature that had contacted me to attend these meetings in the fall of 2019. And they're here with constituents as well. So I want to first welcome Representative Kelly Morrison to our committee, and she can talk a little about some of the issues in Western Hennepin County that relate to the topic that we're talking about today. Representative Morrison, welcome.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, I am, of course, delighted that this committee is elevating the issue of making our communities more walkable and bikeable. The benefits of doing so are legion and well-documented, of course, and include, but aren't limited to, decreased use of fossil fuels and other greenhouse emitting fuels, less pollution, improved fitness, and overall physical and mental well-being. Safety, of course, has to be at the forefront of these plans, especially when they often occur in spaces shared with cars and trucks. In my district and in surrounding districts, concerns about safety along the Highway 7 corridor are front of mind for us. We've experienced tragedies and many near misses along that highway and are grateful that MnDOT is currently conducting a study to evaluate those safety concerns. With pedestrian and biker safety in mind, community members and former city council member, now mayor, Jennifer Labadie, have advocated for a project that would improve safety and help achieve the goal of making our community more walkable and bikeable for quite some time. I want to turn it over to her to describe the project that we really hope will be included in this year's bonding bill. Thanks so much for the opportunity to join you today.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. And again, thank you for inviting me to that meeting a couple years ago. I believe it was at the Minnetonka Middle School, and we had law enforcement and citizens and educational professionals and public officials. And it was really a very, very effective an important meeting. So thank you for alerting me to that. Mayor Labadie, thank you so much for your attendance today. Please state your name for the record and welcome to the Transportation Committee.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. My name is Jennifer Labadie, and I'm the mayor of the city of Shorewood. We're a city in Representative Morrison's district. And many of you came to our city last October during the legislative bus tour and walked on Galpin Lake Road for our project relating to a pedestrian sidewalk that would lead up this road and along the Highway 7 corridor that Representative Morrison just mentioned. Highway 7 bisects my city. We have citizens on both sides of the highway that simply can't walk in their own neighborhoods. Not only that, they can't walk their children safely to the two elementary schools that serve my city or the middle school, Chairman Hornstein, the school you just referenced, Minnetonka Middle School West. They also can't safely walk into the downtown of Excelsior. The city of Shorewood does not have a downtown district. The citizens of my city go into Excelsior, the neighboring city, for downtown activities, shopping, and they cannot safely walk there. Cub Foods is our major grocery store located in the city of Shorewood along Highway 7. People really can't safely access grocery shopping on foot or on bicycle. So my city is really in need of some help as far as pedestrian safety and pedestrian access. The bill that was sponsored by Kelly Morrison and sponsored by Senator Ann Johnson Stewart. That's HF241 and SF2255 are prime examples of some of the comments that were made earlier, especially by Commissioner Alper, on how we can benefit and use some of the recently released funds to benefit local communities such as mine. People should have the ability to walk safely in their own neighborhood. They should be able to walk to their local school, to their local grocery store, and to their downtown district without taking their life in their own hands. And as some of you who were on that legislative bus tour recall, traffic was whizzing by our entire group and the coach bus while we were on Galpin Lake Road. For you, that was a one-time pit stop. For the for the citizens in those neighborhoods, that's their daily life. So we would welcome any help that we could get for both the Galpin Lake Road project and for the Highway 7 project that Representative Morrison also commented on, because the Highway 7 intersects and has entrances into our city at multiple intersections, which in the recent years have involved crashes and one motorcycle car death last summer. So thank you for allowing me to testify today, and I'm available for any questions that the committee may have. Thank you so much, and thank you, Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mayor Labadee. We really appreciate your work and your presence with us.
Thank you.
Okay, members, we have a very special guest now, our former colleague, who is now a Dakota County Commissioner, Lori Halverson, Commissioner Halverson was then Representative Halverson when she invited me to a very well-attended meeting in Eagan after the tragic death of that was mentioned earlier by Representative Richardson. And so I wanted to call on Commissioner Halverson now, and we will hear from her, and then a citizen from Eagan, Jeff McGovern, then Mayor Sanders, the Mayor of Blaine, and then we'll take some questions after Mayor Sanders. So, Commissioner Halverson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So good to see you, so many of my former colleagues. I miss you all. I'm Lori Halverson. I am a Dakota County Commissioner, a former state legislator from Eagan. And I'm here because Dakota County is making increased bike and pedestrian safety a key priority throughout the county. Because of the variety of communities we serve, we're really working on a broad, multi-pronged approach using nationally recognized principles such as safe routes to schools. In 2019, as you heard, our community suffered a terrible tragedy that really sent us reeling, and that was the loss of a student on his way to school who was hit by a car. In the wake of this horrible event, a lot of things happened, but we did pull together some community meetings, and I really thank Representative Hornstein for attending. The county partnered with the state, with the city of Eagan, the school district, and neighbors to create a dramatic redesign of this road. It's about a half a mile stretch of a road called Diffley Road, a county road here in Eagan. Prior to the redesign, Diffley Road was a 45 mile an hour road carrying high volumes of traffic over four lanes plus turn lanes. It was very hard to navigate on foot. In fact, the recommendations, there were signs recommending that people did not cross Diffley Road, and there were very few places to cross along Diffley Road near these schools. When this county road was first designed, the reason it looks like it does or looked like it does is because there weren't any amenities there. There was one elementary school and a few houses. But like so many communities over the decades, things changed. And this area went from hosting a single school to hosting three schools that serve thousands of families every day, multiple neighborhoods of single family and multifamily homes. We've got city athletic fields there now, a skate park, gas stations, retail developments, restaurants, grocery store. The fact is this went from being a place that people drove through to a place that people drive to. And the development did not change to serve the needs for biking and walking safely. So the county initiated a redesign plan, and I'll focus on the engineering aspects of it, because designing for pedestrian safety is much more than just saying that you're going to change a speed limit or put up a crosswalk. We had to re-engineer that road so it was continued to allow traffic to flow, but to allow it to flow slower, much slower. As we heard, that's much safer if we have slower traffic and we're combining cars and pedestrians. And so we looked to re-engineer that road because we heard loud and clear from the residents, we've got to slow down the traffic in front of this road, and we've got to increase opportunities for bikes and pedestrians to cross Diffley Road to get to all these amenities that we've built over the years. And so the new road narrows to a single lane and in both directions. That's and traffic flow is managed by roundabouts. The marked crosswalks include pedestrian advocated flashing beacons, so the pedestrians can push a button and lights flash indicating to the cars that people have to stop. The school district added staffed crossing guards there where there hadn't been before. That definitely is an important aspect of safety, engaging the students in that safety as well. And we were able to get this done, frankly, because the state stepped up and helped us with a $4.2 million bonding request, which really provided the necessary funds for the county and our partners to move quickly to redesign and rebuild this area. It was done and rebuilt and open for back to school in 2021. And so instead of a 45 mile an hour road in front of our three schools and all of the amenities I mentioned, it slows to 35 miles an hour, 30 miles an hour during school crossing times. And the roundabouts and crosswalks slow to 15 miles an hour. So it's much safer from a speed perspective. Without a doubt, there's a lot more work to do and we won't stop. When you talk about the principles of safe routes to school, Safe Routes talks a lot about the six E's. And even though we're talking about safe routes to school, these principles, I really believe, translate well for all bike and pedestrian movement. And this includes community engagement, prioritizing equity, making sure that everybody has access to safe biking and walking. Engineering, as I mentioned, you can't just put up a sign. We had to rebuild the road so that cars would behave in a way that is safer for our pedestrians. And encouragement, which was formerly known as enforcement, you know, making sure that we are engaging our partners in law enforcement and others to encourage the safest possible behavior. And education and evaluation. We dug deeply into all these things on the Diffley Road project, and I'm happy to tell you any examples of how we used this framework to work on Diffley Road. It's also a great example of how this really takes multi-levels of government and the community coming together to build the infrastructure that best serves our communities. Because the fact is, this is a community demand. It has been for a long time. And that's why we're looking at this as a countywide, pedestrian bike safety is a countywide priority. So I wanna thank you all for recognizing that walking and biking are vital modes of transportation. And I hope your committee, as it begins its work this year, will consider vital investments in safe routes to school and bike and pedestrian safety in our communities. Dakota County is here to provide partnership and information at any time. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your interest, and it's wonderful to see you all again.
Thank you so much, Commissioner, and it's wonderful to see you, and thank you for your testimony and your work in the community. And speaking of work in the Eagan community, I'm very happy to welcome Jen McGovern to the Transportation Committee. I met Jen at the meeting in Eagan that Commissioner Halverson referenced, and have kept in touch about her commitment. She has a very deep commitment to this issue and can really speak from the perspective of a citizen and a mom. So Ms. McGovern, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi there. My name is Jennifer McGovern, and I am a Eagan community citizen. I started my journey after Patrick was killed on his way to school and started attending these meetings and meeting Frank and the like. And through my these meetings, I ended up becoming the school crossing guard. It was a lovely job that I enjoyed very, very much. And I saved several children's lives. Unfortunately, I was hit on duty and suffered some minor whiplash. That was difficult. But one of the things that I've experienced is while the speed limits go down, people's attitudes change, haven't changed much. There's still very much the me first mentality going around where vehicles think they are more important, faster, bigger, and they are extremely impatient, don't want to wait for the students to cross the street. They don't want to wait for the students to cross all the way, let alone the crossing guard. I've had to fight my way back from my post to be nearly sideswiped by vehicles. There is a certain amount of, you know, I've asked for help from the higher powers and I keep getting shot down. There are things that could help us, but that's not getting there. And their studies show certain things, but when you're in it and experiencing it, it's very, very different where the speed limit's supposed to be 30, but when people are routinely coming through there at 55 miles an hour and can't stop, the logistics are against anybody that is in the road there. There's another portion of it where I think pedestrians need some re-education also on how to be proper pedestrians. Everybody's distracted, phones, earbuds, you name it. People are not paying attention, but when you get somebody who's angry that throws it in there, it creates a very dangerous situation for everybody. What the bottom line is we're all just trying to get somewhere. These kids are trying to get to school. These kids are trying to get home. You guys are trying to get home or to work. I'm just trying to get home to my family too. But some people deem their time is more valuable and it's doing us a disservice. It's gotten to the point where recently I've had to quit my job that I've enjoyed so much, helping keep these kids safe, because my life has been put on the line and it's not getting better. And I want to know what we can do to make a change for not just able-bodied people, but the community that needs these special resources that are deaf, blind, disabled, you name it.
Thank you, Ms. McGovern. I just appreciate so much your testimony and that you've really literally been on the front lines of this issue. And, you know, the fact that you decided to become a crossing guard as a result of wanting to help once you witnessed the tragedy in Eagan is very, very moving. And we appreciate your coming and your testimony. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
So our next speaker is for those of you who are new to the legislature, and we have many new members, Mayor Tim Sanders is a wonderful former colleague of ours. He served in the House from 2009 to 2017. And you can refresh my memory, Representative Sanders. I seem to recall you were on the Transportation Committee, but maybe not. I knew you were in GovOps for a while, but welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. It's so wonderful for you to join us, and congratulations on being elected mayor of Blaine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is great to see you again as well. My name is Tim Sanders. I am the mayor of the great city of Blaine, and you're correct. I did serve 4 years on the Transportation Committee with you, and I think my entire career on GovOps with you as well. So enjoyed it. It did my heart good. I you refreshed my memory that you're a fellow Ohioan, as well as from Ohio, born in the great Buckeye State. So it's good. Are we going to have a baseball season on time at least this year, Mr. Chair?
I sure hope so, but
I hope so.
Right. On the Super Bowl right now.
Absolutely. Right on. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to just again say hello to all the committee members. And Mr. Chair, thank you again for the opportunity to address the committee on really such an important issue, really that of pedestrian safety. I really appreciated your opening comments as well, Mr. Chair, really bringing attention and focus to the North Metro, as well as Highway 10. Pedestrian safety has really become a big issue and really at the top of mind for most Blaine residents. We had several incidents of cars striking pedestrians in school zones this year. And in October, we had the unfortunate circumstance of a pedestrian who was struck and killed just out walking her dog on 109th Avenue, which is the crossroad of Trunk Highway 65. And so that has been an issue that is on all of our hearts. And we're looking for, again, some relief on how can we make our city more walkable, more bike friendly, and really allow our citizens and the almost 7 million visitors a year that we have that visit the city of Blaine because of the National Sports Center and our sports recreation to really be able to move about our city safely. Trunk Highway 65, for us, it is almost impossible to walk along or across as a pedestrian. You all are aware how serious the motorized vehicle issues are. That makes even the pedestrian and bicycle issues even that much more treacherous. We have in all of the design alternatives, we have pedestrian and bicycle, has been at the top of all the evaluation criteria and will continue to be. As you all know, State Trunk Highway 65 divides our community in half, north, south, east and west sides of the city. It is almost impossible to cross. In fact, when you see someone trying to cross it, it just a knee-jerk reaction, like, what are you doing? This is a highway. But when you look at it, we have so many residences on the west side of Blaine, and much of them are less affluent and some even economically disadvantaged, trying to get to the east side of Blaine, which is where our commercial center is. So for them to get to work, to shop, for food, for clothing, if they don't have a vehicle, there is not a way to safely cross. It is not uncommon for us to see teenagers in their restaurant uniform going to work, trying to cross this road. And just want the committee to think for a second. If you're a teenager walking or on a bike, if you had your family trying to cross Highway 65 to get to the grocery store, how would you feel trying to cross a trunk highway, even at an intersection that has as many cars on it every day as Highway 35? It's just not safe. It's almost not possible. And so we really want to make sure that we are doing things in a very safe way, allowing these pedestrian and bicycle opportunities, that really providing crossings that are safe, that are ADA compliant. We again have those in every major design alternative that we're proposing for this. And I want to thank Representatives Cagle and West for their leadership and help. And you'll continue to see House files come from them on this. But again, even to highlight one more issue, to even get to our Workforce Development Center, which is an Anoka County Workforce Development Center, you have to drive there. You can't walk there. In fact, you have to actually cross. You have to walk across the entrance ramps of Highway 10 to get to the Workforce Development Center if you're walking along Trunk Highway 65. So we, again, are just grateful for the time, Mr. Chair and Committee. Happy to stand for any questions. And just know that this is a major issue at the top of mind for us. And not only do we fix it for vehicles, but even more so that pedestrians and residents and tourists can move safely about the city of Blaine.
Thank you so much, Mayor. We really appreciate it. We appreciate your work and being here. And you've always been the great champion of multimodal transportation, all modes. We had a great visit with you at the Blaine City Hall also a few years back, which I appreciated. And we have a great delegation of Northern legislators from both sides of the aisle to work with.
We do, you. Mr. Chair.
And one of them has a question or a comment, Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to highlight the mayor's, my Claire goes to daycare at the Anoka County Services Building right there on 89th. And I almost stopped right in front of the building the other day to take a picture of the bus stop because it was a bus bench buried in snow. There is no way that it is safe or accessible for anybody to go sit at that bus stop. And so, you know, this is a big issue that affects, you know, so many different levels of our lives. One of the main reasons I got on transportation is because every day you go on a road, and this is something that affects all of us. And so, I've been taking pictures around my community and documenting changes. And so some of them I'm glad to see and some of them I hope to see.
Thank you, Vice Chair Cagle. And we have one more question from Representative Bernardi, and then we're going to move on. And again, for any of this could be if you have a comment. And again, you can question any of our local government folks that have testified here in the last 10 minutes. From Shorewood or Egan or Mayor Sanders. Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and nice to see you, Mayor Sanders, today. And we have a lot to deal with up here in the north, in the Northland. And I see Joe McPherson is on the call at our Zoom event as well. And I just wanted him just to highlight that we're focusing right now on the Blaine portion, but this whole Highway 65 is a very dangerous all the way to the border into Minneapolis. And so if he could just comment on that. It's
what Representative Bernardi, he is our next testifier.
Oh, good. So, good. I was trying to look for the agenda on my phone and I couldn't find it. Good. So hopefully he'll comment. He'll comment it on about then. He'll comment it.
You teed it up well. Thank you for helping us with the transition, Representative Bernardi.
Thanks. And University Avenue.
Mr. McPherson, you have a lot of issues that folks have requested that you comment on, but I just wanted again to just return to, and thank you, Mayor Sanders, again, for being here. I started with Highway 10 because, you know, I think that's in many ways a case study of a problem and how a community has responded, and I think there's clearly more work that needs to be done. But I do so appreciate your being here again, because we have such interest from Anoka County and the northern suburbs on our committee. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and members of the committee. My name is Joe McPherson. I'm the Transportation Division Manager and County Engineer for Anoka County. And to that point, I want to thank a lot of you that are on this committee. We've got Representative Heinrich with us today. He's been an instrumental part of all the funding that's come in for the projects in Anoka and Ramsey. Appreciate all the work he's done. Again, Representative Cagle, Bernardi, the list could go on and on with all the support that we've had in this North Metro communities. So I appreciate all that. I think the first thing I want to start with today is really to follow up on that article that you talked about first, Chair Hornstein, and that was with that tragic fatality with that young 16-year-old girl in the city of Ramsey. I think it's worth talking about what we've done since that point and the positive things that are going through our communities at this point. So I'm going to share my screen here, and what it is a layout that shows what's going to happen in the city of Ramsey on US Highway 10. And again, I just want to call this out and show the committee members and those that are testifying with us here today what can happen when a group gets together and supports each other. And I know this is probably small on the screen. Can everybody see it?
I'm good. Yeah, it looks good.
Okay, so I'm gonna zoom in a little bit. This is in the city of Ramsey. Highway 10, of course, is east and west here. This corridor handles upwards of 55 to 60,000 cars a day. So it's very difficult for a pedestrian or bicyclist or even vehicles to travel on this corridor. And over the course of the last 10 years since that tragic fatality happened and several other horrible accidents, we've really streamlined the design process. We've involved the communities. We've got some economically depressed communities that exist along this corridor. We want to make sure that all voices are heard. And as you can see, and I invite you to check out the websites that we have online too, because there's so much information to share. But as you can see here, there's sidewalks, trails. It's a true multimodal experience that we're building along Highway 10. It services all those facets. Because you've got townhome communities, you've got businesses, you've got freight providers. You've got businesses on the north side of the BNSF rail track, which has 90 trains a day. And it's all being spurred by the commitments from this committee and others, and on the Senate side as well. We've got a fully funded project, $140 million. We're gonna get this done starting in 2023 and finish it up in 2026. So I just want to share this good news. It's something to share with this committee to show that projects do get done and communities come together and they talk about these types of things. You can see the sidewalks here. The next one I wanted to show as we walk east along the Highway 10 corridor, there were a couple fatalities that took place near the municipal liquor store on Highway 10. If you're familiar with Highway 10, as you come towards Anoka, the first stoplight you hit is Fair Oak Avenue. And on the north side of Highway 10 is a bedroom community area, a pretty densely populated home area. And then on the south side is where all the services are. Many people were cheating the highway because there was so little green time on the side streets through the traffic volumes. Pedestrians were risking their own life to jump across the roadway and they were getting hit. So actually shortly after 2012, we built a barrier along there. And believe it or not, you could go out there with the camera and people were still taking their life in their own hands. And they were jumping over the barrier to get across the highway. And so they were still narrowly getting hit. But this is another success story that you guys have supported and are funding. There's a lot of pedestrian pathways here. It's truly another multimodal experience and a successful project that will be under construction starting this year. Next, I want to transition into what Mayor Sanders had, and he did a great job of explaining the situation in the city of Blaine. And we're working together with the city, as well as our partners at MnDOT and FHWA, to look at the Trunk Highway 65 corridor and the situations that have arisen there. I'm not gonna go over all the information that he shared with you, but that project is underway and we do ask for your support in bills that are coming your way to help support and fund the improvements that we're starting on that corridor. The other part that I wanted to follow up on Representative Bernardi's point there is, if you take a snapshot at the next section that MnDOT currently has a Pell study on, in the cities of Blaine, Spring Lake Park, you've also got Fridley and Columbia Heights here. I just took out some of the information. I'm an engineer, we're always detail oriented. I didn't wanna kill you with too much details. But on the screen here, you can see on the 65 corridor, from approximately Highway 10 South, just to the Anoka County border. I just pulled our details. In the period from 2015 to 2019, there were 2 fatal pedestrian and bicycle accidents, 8 serious injuries. And then just in the last 2 years, and this is preliminary data, there's been 3 fatalities with pedestrians and bicyclists and 2 serious injuries. And that's among 98 pedestrian crashes, 41 bicycle crashes. And additionally, on the 47 corridor, in 2015, there's a typo there, 2015 to 2019, 9 fatal crashes. And I know Representative Cagle, you live just down the street from where 3 of these occurred, which is at 85th Avenue. So she's very aware of the seriousness of this, of what's going on out there. But 9 fatal crashes, 7 serious. And again, just in the last 2 years, another fatal and 3 more serious and minor injury crashes along that corridor. I just want to share that with you, just to give you a glimpse of the situation out here. There's a lot of traffic out there. There's a lot of pedestrians. There's a lot of neighborhoods and a lot of people wanting to use that corridor. And so again, I invite you to help support these bills that are coming forward, help us fund these improvement projects and find a solution that works for everybody.
Thank you so much, Mr. McPherson. And this was a really very helpful and informative presentation. And I think our partners in the Highway 12 corridor that we heard from on Tuesday, I think you do have a success story, but it's an ongoing story, just like the folks on Highway 12. There's more work to do, but I think, again, this kind of collaborative model that you talked about is really, you know, I think, That has been a recipe for success for communities across the state. Members, I'm sorry, we're just going to have to hold on questions because we have three more testifiers and I want to make sure that they have a chance to speak. If we have time before 2:30 and there are questions, either for Mr. McPherson or our next three testifiers, we'll take those. But I want to make sure they have time. So we have Trevor Turner, Hannah Habrecht, and Lee Gansky. I will call on you in that order. And if you could keep your comments to about 3 minutes or so, then I think we can maybe have a couple of minutes left for questions. So Mr. Turner, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and members of the committee. My name is Trevor Turner, and I'm the Public Policy Director for the Minnesota Council on Disability. Pedestrian safety is incredibly important for Minnesotans with disabilities. Many Minnesotans with disabilities must walk or roll on our streets to carry out essential living tasks, such as commuting to work, buying groceries, attending appointments, and enjoying leisurely activities. I myself am a deaf-blind Minnesotan who regularly walks and uses public transit as I go about my day. And far too often, I've had several experiences of being nearly hit by a car as I'm crossing at a crosswalk. I worry that sometime in the future, I may not be so lucky. For Minnesotans with disabilities, pedestrian safety includes quality pathways and sidewalks with wide medians that separate them from the roads. It includes sidewalks that are free of ice and snow in Minnesota's winters. Pedestrian safety means well-lit pathways at night that are free of crime. It also means functioning and reliable crosswalk signals. Pedestrian safety means more density in our towns and cities so that the distances between stores and businesses are walkable. It includes pedestrian policies that are inclusive and are designed with disability in mind. Pedestrian safety means access and allowing Minnesotans with disabilities to live and work in the communities of their choice, a right guaranteed by the Supreme Court Olmstead decision. Pedestrian safety means a state that prioritizes pedestrians over drivers and actively encourages residents to walk or roll. When you prioritize disabilities and pedestrian safety, everyone in the community benefits. This is known as universal design. For example, it has been established that when you widen and smooth sidewalks for wheelchair users, more people use the sidewalks and stay off the roads, reducing pedestrian deaths. When you ensure that every crosswalk has curb checks, it also benefits new parents with strollers, the elderly with walkers, cyclists, and those wheeling heavy items. Pedestrian bridges not only protect those who are walking, but also reduce traffic accidents at intersections. Having audible and visible cross signals for the blind and deaf also protect those who can see and hear, especially those wearing earbuds or aren't paying attention. Universal design is always good policy, and when universal design is considered from the start, it is more cost-effective than trying to retroactively fix bad policies. Minnesota Council on Disability is always a resource for this committee, and we actively encourage our legislators to reach out to us at any time, especially regarding transportation and pedestrian safety. So when the committee prioritizes pedestrian safety, it's also prioritizing Minnesotans with disabilities. And when you prioritize Minnesotans with disabilities, all Minnesotans benefit. And I want to thank the committee today on behalf of the Minnesota Council on Disability, and I thank you, Chair Hornstein, as your constituent. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, Mr. Turner, and thank you for your ongoing partnership on this issue and so many issues that are of high priority for the legislature. Thank you for your work. Our next testifier is Hannah Habrecht, and welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Hi. Thank you. My name is Hannah Habrecht, and I live in Rochester, Minnesota, and thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today. I moved to Minnesota last year to start my first year of medical school. Most of my classmates also moved from out of state. Within our first 2 months in Minnesota, one of my classmates was hit in a crosswalk by a driver who ran a red light. He sustained several serious injuries, including several fractures in his spine. About a month later, another classmate was struck by a driver on her bike when the driver tried to accelerate around her to turn right. And that's two out of a class of 54. Down the road from us in Winona, a student was just hit last month while walking to class at Winona State University. She is still in the hospital. There are many more near-miss accounts among my peers. I personally had cars swerve around me in crosswalks and seen drivers consistently ignore the pedestrian signal at lights. Driver aggression is high. Walking and biking around the city, I've had people shout from their cars, roll coal as they pass, and even throw fireworks. Statistics echo the anecdotes. Fatal pedestrian crashes are up significantly, as you have heard from other speakers. People from around the world travel to Rochester, patients, students, healthcare providers, and many more. Many of these people don't have a car, nor do they want to have one, and the street should feel comfortable and friendly for our pedestrians. At the moment, they do not. Better and safer pedestrian crossings and street design would make a difference. Things like road right sizing, bulb outs for corners, reducing drive lane widths, and placing more emphasis on sidewalks outside of our homes, not just the trails. In general, there seems to be a lack of awareness and respect for people outside of an automobile. And I think an important part of addressing this is also driver and pedestrian safety education. I know Minnesota has had a complete streets policy for more than a decade, but given the recent spike in crashes, I hope that more effort is placed on its continued implementation at the state and local levels with a focus on pedestrians and bicyclists who are our most vulnerable road users. I also know that there is a state pedestrian plan and there's absolutely a need to implement it. Organizations like Bike MN's People Friendly Driver Program, Walk Bike Fun, and We Bike Rochester make a difference and could use more support. Finally, I ask you to consider more transportation demand management positions across the state, adopting a Vision Zero policy statewide, and supporting safe routes to schools. I'm learning to be a physician because of my passion and commitment to human health. I think my peers would echo the same sentiment. I ask for your help to make Minnesota a safer, healthier place to be a pedestrian. And if you find yourself in Rochester, I invite you to join me for a walk or a bike ride around downtown to experience in person. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Ms. Habreck, that was really very, very helpful testimony, and just good luck with your studies, and appreciate your being able to not only be with us, but you know the connections you made between health and safety and the topic that we have by pedestrian safety today. So thank you for that. Fine, our last testifier is Lee Gansky from the Greater Mankato Bike and Walk Advocates, and he will take us up to 2:30. Members, I'm sorry that we won't have time for questions, but if you all have questions you want to ask these last several speakers, we have their contact information and we can pass those on. So, Ms. Lee Gansky, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record, and look forward to your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Lee Gansky. I'm Vice President of the Greater Mankato Bike and Walk Advocates. We're a local organization working for better, safer biking and walking for everyone in our community through education, encouragement, and engagement with government and other stakeholders. Pedestrian safety is very important to the cities of Mankato and North Mankato, as well as the surrounding area. We have not been immune from crashes where pedestrians have been killed or seriously injured. Our interest in promoting better and safer walking opportunities is multifaceted. We are a college community where many students do not have vehicles and rely on walking as a primary means of transportation. We are a community full of primary and secondary school children, many of whom live within walking distance of their school. We are a community where the downtown area is being revitalized, including with several new housing projects. People who move downtown often cite interest in walking as a prime motivator. We're also a community where beyond college students, many other residents do not have the interest in or the means for vehicle ownership. These residents need transit, biking, safe walking, and safe wheelchair and scooter routes to get around. We're a health conscious community, where folks know the value of a good walk in the fresh air. And finally, we're a community where people want to cut their carbon footprint. They're interested in walking instead of driving, which accomplishes this. Many of our community leaders in education, government, and business understand these interests in better, safer walking. We've seen a number of great projects take shape, several through Safe Routes to School, sidewalk bump outs to narrow pedestrian crossing distances, and extra wide paths creating a parkway feel between MSU Mankato and the downtown, to name a few. Much more work is needed, however. A Highway 169 corridor plan was recently completed for North Mankato and Mankato. Several pedestrian improvements were identified, the most significant being two pedestrian overpasses. As you know, such overpasses are expensive. It's not all about infrastructure. Our area would benefit from statewide implementation of the Minnesota Walks program, which includes education and planning. I hope that our community is selected to be one of the 40 communities receiving assistance with a planning process. Finally, there are educational programs. A previous speaker mentioned Bike MN's People Friendly Driver and Walk Bike Fund, which could use more funding and emphasis. Our organization has promoted Walk Bike Fund in our schools. I appreciate having the opportunity to testify today, to provide a Greater Minnesota perspective, and to share with you some of our interests, our accomplishments, and ongoing needs. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Mr. Gansky, for your testimony, and again, your work. And I also appreciate the broader statewide perspective that you were able to give us. So members, this brings our hearing to an end. I just want to again thank Representative Richardson for her work and really prioritizing this. And I think we've learned today why it needs to be a priority. And so we will be, you know, looking at different projects that were mentioned today and other support we can give to this effort as the session moves forward. So just before we adjourn, a reminder, our next meeting is going to be on Tuesday, February 15th. And our agenda has been set. We'll be hearing the overviews of the governor's supplemental budget proposals from the executive branch agencies that we will have on Tuesday. Will be MnDOT and the Department of Public Safety. So with that, members, have a great weekend, a good end to the week, and we will see you next Tuesday. We are adjourned.